Thanks for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast on CelticUnderground.net. I keep organising these immediate post-game podcasts in the hope that one of them's going to be an upbeat, uplifting, we won a game one. Ugh, maybe next season. So this week, straight after the game, got Anthony Murray on. We are talking about the Hibs game, not being too critical of some of the younger players. It's the circumstance that got us there, and we'll get into that as well. So it's me, Harry Brady, with him, Anthony Murray. So I am joined now by Anthony Murray. The game finished about 12 minutes ago. We'll talk about the game first. Before we talk about, I mean, I suppose it's difficult to talk about the game without talking about the circumstance about the teams there, but we'll try and talk about the game first. So we had no idea what the team was going to be until the team's announced. So what did you think of the team?
I'd fallen for a fake one beforehand, and so I had a conversation with pals about, you know, the first, you know, lineup that went out, which was quite interesting because, you know, the circumstances dictated that certain players weren't there. The list, the fact that there was 13 players unavailable, and then that team comes out and it's like, all right, well, who are this 13 then? Because, you know, it's still relatively solid. You know, it's not like kids you've never heard of and kids you've never seen. It was proper, you know, McGregor's there, Duffy's there, you know, Frimpong, you know, there's first teamers there, Turnbull's there. So it was, The fact that the spine of the team was familiar was a bit of a surprise, you know, the other way. And at that point, you know, a little bit of confidence comes and then a little bit of excitement by the fact that there is some new names there. So it wasn't like, oh, God, we're going to get pumped by the Hibs here. It was, all right, I'm quite excited about this. You know, bearing in mind, all we've been doing is playing friendly since October and we've got another 4 months of this. May as well try and find some joy in it.
Yeah, so Hazard in goals, Frimpong at right back, who has massively stagnated as a player this season. Duffy and Welsh, Laxalt left back. Then, as you say, the midfield, Soro, McGregor, Tumble. The only problem is, I think that was the only fit area that he had was midfielders.
Yeah.
Because we had no strikers.
Yeah, that hit me. I scribbled down in my notes. It took me 55 minutes to notice it. I'm obviously not the sharpest knife in the kitchen. But yeah, no striker. I guess you're kind of hoping that Harper's going to be a, you know, worst case scenario, like a Mark Burchill, that's just going to, you know, scurry around, get into space, you know, get away from a defender. But it didn't really happen for him. You know, with the best will in the world, you know, nobody loves a Celtic youth player more than me. And all I'm wanting is for them to show me how good they are. And I'm just kind of scribbling little notes. And it's just like, you know, I'm crossing bad moments and ticking. No, God, I've forgotten how cross season ticks work. Ticks are good. Crosses are bad. Yeah. So every mistake he makes, you know, it's a cross. And it's just, you know, it's getting messy in my notebook. And I'm like, ah, right. And it culminates in him doing what I call a Lee Naylor. You know, when a guy goes down the left and crosses it onto the top of the goal?
Yeah.
That is the Lee Naylor, and he did a Lee Naylor. I did feel sorry for him when he went down with cramp, and, like, he's pulling his own leg, you know, to get rid of the cramp. It's like, someone go to the boy. You know, is that how bad it is right now, that players are just looking on at a teammate and being like, yeah, fix your own cramp? Do you know why is someone not over there helping him? That was horrible to me. But I don't know.
I'm maybe as I'm getting older, I'm getting more and more agitated about the lack of patience that some Celtic fans have in young players. So, you know, maybe because you get older and you think of occasions when young players were getting slaughtered, and it was simply because they were a young player who needed game time. Obviously, the most famous one is Stan Petrov, but there's been other situations. So you're desperately, as you say, you're desperately thinking, come on, do something. There is another part of me that says, he's 20. And he's, you know, he's not 18, he's not 17.
Yeah.
And he's been nowhere near the first team. And this is where you're trying to, you're wrestling with different thoughts about this. You're thinking, oh, great, Harper's in the team. I've read a few good things about him and the youth setup. And then you hear he's 20 and you think, you're 20 years of age, mate. Jeremy Frimpong at 20 has had a season and a half of first team football.
Yeah.
And then you think, ah, but we do have a manager who doesn't like playing young players. So maybe the reason you've been nowhere in the first team squad's basically the manager. And then during the game, I'm not going to be critical of him. Have the reserve played any football this season?
You wouldn't think so. I mean, it's not like the old days. I used to, like, going back to the day of McGeady and the youth team, I remember, like, closely following, using the Celtic webpage to follow the 18s and the 21s.
Yep.
And the first team. And, you know, I could have named every team, you know? Mm-hmm. And now I don't have a clue what's happening. And maybe I'm not following it close enough, but you don't get the sense that there's the structure here.
I don't think this season, to be fair, which again is why I would have great sympathy for them. They're not playing games of football.
Yeah.
I mean, which might be why he got cramped, but he was just anonymous, particularly second half, wasn't he?
He had a chance down the right and a chance down the left. His cross from the right, you know, hit the goalkeeper, these things happen. His cross down the left, I think it just got cut out, didn't it? So he, you know, I kind of got excited because there was another American boy scored a hat-trick for Schalke the other day. And when I saw we'd named this American, oh, it's going to be headline news, these Americans scoring for these top teams. But no, there was no hat-trick to be scored by young Harper today. He worked hard, you know. there was other players in the park, you know.
Yes. Mikey Johnson, who... I think we were playing the same system. I think we were playing the 4-1-3-2, but Mikey Johnson, the amount of times I saw Mikey Johnson picking the ball up, deeper than off our centre-halves, deeper than our midfield at times. To be fair to Mikey Johnson, he's not a striker, you know. But he was picking the ball up awful deep. I thought, I mean, maybe that's what he likes, because he likes to run at people and so he wants to pick it up deep so he can get the ball turned and run at people. But what were your thoughts on Mikey?
Again, I'm looking for the best. And the fact that he's looking for the ball is, you know, that's a head start. You know, that's he's not hiding.
Yeah.
So any player that's going to come in and say, give me the ball. But, you know, as I've referenced a million times, you know, the way good footballers work is, you know, give and go, give and go. And there was at least one time he dropped off and, you know, Duffy gave it to him and he gave it back to Duffy. And then he's the defenders bought it at that point and drifted off. And Mikey's like, now give me it back again. You know, it needs to be the tick-tack, tick-tack.
Yeah.
And then he's got the time. But Duffy just pumps the brakes. And you see him saying, you know, give me it now. Not that he had a flawless game. You know, he also made mistakes as well. I think if just looking at my tick sheet, it's tick, 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 cross, tick-ish, and then hooked. So, you know, that's me being optimistic at what he was up to. But like I say, he wasn't hiding. He seemed to be getting stroppy with the referee, as was Turnbull, you know, in terms of, you know, just getting nicked and stuff. But, you know, these guys need to toughen up. They're playing in Scotland. They know the refs aren't going to give them anything cheap. So they need to battle through that. So, you know, if I was their coach, you know, you'd just drill that into them. There's no point complaining. You're not going to get it.
Which is the thing that for me, I remember going to a thing with Ronnie Dyer, a fans forum thing with Ronnie Dyer, and Ronnie Dyer was talking about the biggest difficulty is moving into being a first team player. Because, and this might get back to your nobody fixing the cramp thing. He said that, you know, you've got a young guy who probably at 12 was playing for the 14 age group. because he's so much better than everybody else.
Yeah.
And at 15, at 13, he's playing for the 15 age group. And from the age of 10, everybody's telling him he's a star, he's a wonder player. And he gets to 17, 18, and he's been a wonder player all his life. And he goes into first team training with men.
Yeah.
Who are full-time internationals, who have only one interest. And in fact, I spoke to someone who went into a coaching. The biggest thing he noticed was how much, even in the most basic training session, these guys were utter winners and incredibly bad losers. You know, storming about the place if they lost a game. And
yeah.
And so you're 17, 18 going into that environment. Remember Ronnie Dyer said it takes an incredibly huge, strong inner personality that when somebody pings a pass to you and you don't take it and control it, nobody has any consideration for the fact that you're the 18-year-old new boy.
Yeah.
You're playing first-team football, so they will talk to you whether you're 18 or 28, they will talk to you the same way. And for me, on the wider topic of Scottish football, is the reason why I think it's no surprise that Portuguese, German, Spanish football throughout Europe that has B teams playing in men's competitions bring through young players into their first team in international football because they're playing a man's game with men. And for me, that was the issue tonight with Harper. He's playing against seasoned pros and Hibs, and they just nudged him and pushed him out of the game.
Yeah.
So what was your thoughts on the rest of the midfield?
I thought Soro, Soro's a metronome. That's his role. He is just going to move the ball quickly. He got a booking early on, or relatively early on, and at that point you start to worry, but he just kept doing his job. He didn't put himself in stupid positions where he's going to get that second yellow and get sent off.
That's the thing for me that he's got to learn to get out of his game is giving away those stupid bookings.
I mean, they seem quite cheap,
cheap, silly bookings, yeah.
But I mean, I think it's cheap from the point of view of the referee dishing them out. He jumped in at a guy, the other, wasn't. Is that yellow? I don't know. Maybe you're right. But ultimately, I think Soro played well. And it is, Tom Boyd said something in the coverage that I agreed with. The shot he hit from distance was actually a nicer strike than the one he scored with the other week. He kind of toy sclaffed that. And it swerved in beautifully. It looked great. Keeper didn't do very well, but it looked like a great goal. Whereas the one he caught tonight, he really ripped it. So that was quite impressive. So I'm always happy for. I always understand why a sitting midfielder, when it opens up, is going to want to have a pop. I grew up watching videos of Ari Hahn and Ruud Krol from the 74 and 78 World Cups, just smashing them from distance. So I'm happy for Soro to have a pop in that situation. And ultimately, I think he played quite well. McGregor, like Mikey Johnson, was, McGregor always tries to do stuff. Mm-hmm. I'll never ever fault McGregor. He's always trying to get on the ball. He's always trying to move it. I think at some point I scribbled down, collectively, do we look tired already? This is not the post-Dyla, Rodgers team in terms of running teams into the ground. We used to just bugger teams in the last 25 minutes. And now we look knackered after 55. It's like, all right. I forgot it was Sesh O'Clock in Dubai last week. So it is all rather sad to see us, that decline. But ultimately, again, McGregor was one of the three, wasn't he, on the line at the end, I think, which wasn't a great moment. But I thought McGregor was doing all right. Turnbull, like I say, I think he was getting fouled or, getting out-muscled at times. He still needs to grow. He's still pretty young. Rogic had some beautiful touches, but ultimately he's a busted flush.
I actually, at halftime, thought you should get Rogic off because Turnbull's wasted out in the right and Turnbull should be playing where Rogic is and just pay somebody else on the right-hand side for Rogic. I always think Peter Martin on two occasions made reference to the cup final goal against Aberdeen. When you get to a point when you're referencing what a player did 4 years ago, there's a problem with that.
Yeah.
That player.
So, yeah, I mean, we discussed this last summer, you know, his time's up, which, you know, these things happen. So, yeah, he wasn't particularly good. I thought Welsh was brilliant. I'll say brilliant. I'm being hyperbolic. I'm trying to find positive.
You're trying to get a game on. You're trying to get a place on some sort of Scottish media outlet.
Yeah. The bar is set so low at this point. I genuinely thought Welsh was good. Again, you know, up until the very end when we let in a stupid goal from what I would say was an excellent free kick. You know, it was a game of two free kicks, really. Because Turnbull's was perfect. You know, I don't understand why anyone who calls themselves a professional footballer should be able to hit a dead ball like that. Do you know what I mean? If I had the license to sit and hit dead balls for 2 hours after training every day, that's all I'd do. Be great fun. You know, get some kid from the reserves, get a pile of balls, sub keeper, say, right, let's play free kicks.
Do you know, you mentioned players tiring, and if I'd have tweeted this, people would have, when Turnbull then scores the free kick, people would have gone, I see what happens if he hadn't been on the park. But I think you'll get my point when I say there's more to just being on the park. We were having a text conversation about Turnbull looked absolutely knackered just before he scored the free kick. Now, he scored the free kick from a stationary position. He looked knackered before it and knackered after. He keeps looking knackered from around about the 70th minute in every game. Round about that point in a game, he massively fades out of the game looking knackered. And again, you can, working on your technique is a difficult thing to do. It's marginal improvements once you're at their standards. You know, much as we might say the difference between Turnbull and Messi is huge, but actually, once you're at Turnbull's level, it's marginal changes to keep improving, but you can work on your fitness. Because that's just cardio, going to the gym. And I actually thought, I sent a text to someone, I thought Laxalt had a good game. I thought Duffy had one of his better games, and I thought Hazard had a good game. And Laxalt, Hazard and Duffy were all at fault for the goal.
Yeah, it was a horrible goal. But, I mean, I'm always trying to find, you know, positives in other teams in terms of things that you'll be impressed by. Some of our listeners hate the fact that I sing Stevie Mallon's praises whenever I get the chance. Not suggesting for a moment we should be looking for him, but he knows that I hit a nice free kick. And that free kick he hit was, you know, it was beautiful. And it was the same free kick. It was two or three steps, up and down, pure technique. You know, it actually goes quite high. It's a bit like a Sean Maloney free kick. Mm-hmm. But it drops down in that danger area. And I think it was Porteous, was it? I think was attacking. I might be wrong. You know, my mates are furious with Hazard, who flaps and it, you know, it reaches the other guys. Which was a shame because my tachometer, Hazard, had a good game.
You know, Hazard, I actually saw on Twitter, I can't remember who it was, it was Celtic Wiki or Big List, had actually about 30 seconds earlier tweeted, is Hazard man of the match?
He was my man of the match. I think Celtic TV gave it to Turnbull, you know, once he'd scored the free kick. But for me, it wasn't, you know, it was hands down Hazard up to that point. You know, the pick of the saves was the one where Nisbet was through and he came out big and made the big block.
That was a good save.
That was a good, good save. The others were all, you know, from the edge of the box and saves he should be making. But he had a couple of, you know, more than the average Celtic home game for an SPFL game. And he was making the saves. So it was a shame that he was involved in that calamity at the end. But, you know, he wasn't the only one. Duffy did all right, but...
I'm not saying he had a great game. I'm just saying for Duffy, apart from the one where he's completely sliced it in the first half, where he completely sliced it with nobody around and they got a corner kick out of it.
Yeah, and Frimpong's body language was like, what was that? You know, like that was a genuine, you know, why are you here sort of moment. But ultimately, you know, he settled into the game, did all right. Like I say, Welsh didn't have any of those moments. I think that's why I was ranking Welsh so highly, you know, within the context of this game. The one thing about Welsh, if I was a coach, I'd like to see Welsh on his toes a bit more. You know, that was when I was doing coaching badges and stuff. It was probably the glory era of, you know, Pep's Barcelona. And I was obsessed with guys being on their toes. You know, Larsson was always on his toes. You know, mm-hmm. Larsson was always bouncing about. So, you know, if the best footballers of all time spent a lot of their time on their toes, you know, big Welshie, you get on your toes. It would be my advice. That said, you know, he knows how to put his foot on the ball and move it quickly when it needs to be moved. And I thought he did a decent game. You know, wait for Soro to come and get it, make for guys to make the angles. And then ultimately, he was brave at times. You know, won headers, got his toe in. Won. I thought he did all right. And I like to see the fact that when Turnbull scored the free kick, which was brilliant, you know, it was Welsh was in with the celebration, you know, like really. I mean, it means something to these guys. You know, it means something to all of them, as it does to all of us.
But well, if I'm one of the guys who's in the squad tonight, particularly if I was a first team starter, I would be thinking, I've got two games here where I might get a third. And if I play well in these two games, because there's two games where we'll be having if I play well in these two games, I may get the third. I'm going to make it so he can't drop me for the third game when people are back. And if I get the third game, I'm going to make sure he can't drop me for the fourth game. That's how I'd be taking it.
Yeah.
If I was one of these guys, grab your opportunity. You know you've got two games. You don't have to. I remember I knew Adam Virgo when he signed for Celtic and... I remember him commenting that the worst thing in the world is coming on as a substitute with 5 minutes to go, particularly as a defender.
Yeah.
Because the manager says to you, just go in and do the basics and don't go chasing the ball. He said, but no matter how much that's, you know, that's the right thing to do. You cannot help but think, I've got 5 minutes to try and show that I should be playing for Celtic every week.
Yeah. That's impossible, and
it's impossible to do. So what you end up doing is actually running to try and get the ball when you should have just stood and watched it go past. But you're just trying to get a touch because you've only got 5 minutes to. There's a part of you saying you don't want to be on the pitch for 5 minutes and never even touch the ball. So these players have got. That's what I'd be drumming into them. You've got two games here to show that you should be a Celtic player.
There is one I've made a decision on. This is probably genetically on my mum's side. My mum's family were all very much that classic Glasgow, he'll never be a player. You know,
right.
It's like, oh, this young McStay guy, never going to be a player. Larsson, never be a player. You know, that those kind of people.
Yes.
You know? And I think people have listened to this podcast and the other podcasts I did for the channel would know that, you know, I'm pretty optimistic and pretty loving of the players that deserve to be loved. But I've seen enough in youth team videos and tonight to say Okoflex, never be a player. Never be a Celtic player. Don't need to see him ever again. I like a really, really poor man's Scott Sinclair.
Are you prejudiced because he was wearing headphones, earbuds?
There is that. My default setting was, you know, a teacher spends their life. Well, pre-COVID, a teacher would spend their life saying, oi, get that out your ear. And now, because of, you know, all my communication is done online, you know, I'm just used to it now. So there was that. But then immediately I understood, oh, that's hilarious. He's literally listened to Neil Lennon talk shite as he comes on. That's not his fault. But he's not good enough. O'Day and the other guy... we're having a conversation about how cocky he was. It's like, you know, Celtic youth players have come through cocky in the past. You know, McGeady, by all accounts, was as cocky as they come, but McGeady was brilliant. you know, he was absolutely, you know, he tore up the youth team level and he jumped into the first team, and he was very quickly, not overnight, but before long enough, you know, within, what, 4 months of his debut, he's playing in the Champions League and leading Milan defenders a merry dance. So, you know, he backed it up. I've never seen anything of Okoflex on video to make me think there's a Celtic player of the future. And at that point, if you know, if I can see it, and now I'm people might think, you know, you get some wrong, you get some right. Strachan was going on the other week on Celtic TV about how he never rated young Cal McGregor. Right? Now, I did rate young Cal McGregor, so my judge of a player is better than Gordon Strachan's. I'm now happy to commit that to record. I can see a player better than our ex-manager can. So I'm going to say now, Okoflex, never a player.
Neil Lennon didn't rate McGregor either. It was, and Kieran Tierney was on his way out the door until Ronnie Dyla came along.
And the black mark there is that Dyla signed Colin Kazim Richards.
Did he?
Tell me he didn't. That I'm happy that story be whitewashed, you know.
No, I remember. I always wondered if it was I just need a mature player in the squad to get us over the line. We're the only person I can get you, Colin. You know, like 24 hours of transfer window left. Well, I could get you, Colin Kazim Richards. He's crap. Right, well, there's nobody else. You know, I've heard that before a couple of times about, you know, this whole concept of Peter Lawwell signs players. No, he doesn't sign players and all that type of stuff. I have heard from people who are close to Neil Lennon who things like, somebody told me the Timo Pukki signing was, you know, because that's a famous one of, that was a Lawwell signing. Well, no, Neil Lennon chose him. And I think sometimes these things, it's a bit like we didn't sell Paolo Di Canio, we traded him. You know? So I've heard from people close to Lennon that it was, he's the only player, you know, like, say they pulled together a shortlist of 10 players.
Yeah.
And he was in ninth place or something like that. He wasn't, never in a million years would I sign him, but he's not on my list of priorities. And it got towards the end of the transfer window and it was, well, the only one out of our list that we went through that we could still have a chance against Timo Pukki. So it's Timo Pukki or nobody. Right, well, I have Timo Pukki. Right. So it depends which way you want to look at that. If you're on the Lawwell side of things, you'd say, well, Lennon chose him because he didn't have to sign him. If you're on the Lennon side of things, well, I needed a striker and it was him or nobody. So I think I always put Colin Kazim Richards in that category. I remember somebody very senior at Celtic having a real not happy discussion with me because I said, why did we get rid of the past it Samaras and then sign the even more past it Colin Kazim Richards to replace him? Yeah, that comment didn't go down well. Anyway, your Okoflex, you've written him off for this because this is the squad for next week as well, or for the next game, whenever it is. Who is it? Who are we playing in the runners-up competition to try and avoid, to make sure we finish second? Who are we playing next week? Livingston at home. Livingston, who've just equaled Martin O'Neill's, or just only Martin O'Neill and one other, and I think George Burley at Hearts have had a better winning start to a managerial career. What's his name? Martindale, is it?
Oh, it's some guy I've never heard of.
Ah, because you've not been to Pullman or Barrell. That's why you've not heard of him.
But he's doing a good job, apparently, you know.
Aye, yeah. Livingston manager, what's his name? David Martindale. Yeah, he's the Livingston manager. You can read an article, Martindale's Journey from Prison to Leading Livingston, in the Guardian. All about how a guy who goes to jail for 5 years for being a drug dealer is a good guy, really.
I'm going to embrace my inner Catholicism, my lapsed Catholicism, and say, you know, he served his time. He's hopefully sought forgiveness, and he deserves a second chance.
So Okoflex is nowhere near here.
Oh, he's never going to be a Celtic player. No. Henderson, I've had hope for in the past, but he came in today, made one slack tackle and did nothing else. And then Dembele came on, and there's part of me that's cursing our situation where we've taken this once in a generation talent and stagnated him at a key developmental stage, and now he's never going to be a player, or he was never going to be a player, and, you know, let him go and let him be the next Islam Farouz, or he could leave us and then, you know, kick on and be a superstar. I wouldn't bet on it at this point. But it is a shame that someone with apparently so much talent is not going to do it in the hoops long term.
So that was another 2 points dropped this season. So I think we're 3,452 points behind Rangers. I think we've got 75 games in hand or something like that. But I think our only hope is for COVID to become horrifically bad. And it's so bad that there's nobody left alive to even call the league for Rangers. I think that's our only hope of staving this off, the inevitable off. So let's get to the nub of the matter, which is how we ended up with 13 players and 3 coaches not available for tonight's game. So back to the beginning, trip to Dubai. What were your thoughts when you knew we were going to Dubai?
There's that part of, we've been doing this for years. You know, it's part of the routine now. Like in the summer pre-COVID, you know, the whole Austria Czech Republic trip had been part of a routine that Rodgers had put in place that worked. Mm-hmm. It worked for us. Hot weather training, all that stuff. So, you know, in any other year when we're winning or running away with titles, who's complaining about them going off to Dubai? If that's the only place elite athletes can go at that time of year to, you know, stretch themselves, then that's what people do. I've got all kinds of issues with the Middle East and stuff like that. You know, you couldn't pay me to go to Dubai. I don't understand Europe's nouveau riche obsession with the place. I watched a video about it the other day. It looks like a shithole. Can you make me go there? But, you know, these young footballers seem to enjoy it. They're big steaks and they're shisha pipes, not a shit. So that's where we go. And if there's good facilities, that's a good thing. Your thoughts?
I was completely indifferent to it. I was a bit like you. I mean, obviously, again, I have no great desire to go there. Be interesting to see if we'd be allowed to send our women's team there to play and do, you know, training in vest tops and things like that. But anyway, I was really indifferent to it. I was a bit like you. Look, that's our routine. That's what we do. If it's been signed off by the government and the SFA and we're allowed to go, fine. Then we lose to Rangers and you think, that's just, people are just going to be moaning about this trip now.
Yeah.
So there's a potential PR issue here. Then the COVID numbers start to get worse and you think, this is really going to start to be a PR issue. And if we come back, I remember being in a WhatsApp group with people and we actually said, if we come back with one positive case, we'll be slaughtered for going. So you have to weigh that up in the decision-making about whether you go or not. you have to have that thought process. What are the chances of us having one positive test coming back from that? And how will it be treated from a PR side of things? You know, we've already experienced, and I'm not trying to be political, this is the way all politicians operate. Nicola Sturgeon gave us in Aberdeen a huge kicking, a disproportionately huge kicking at the beginning of the season because she was because of the exams fiasco in Scotland, coincided with that. She's getting, you don't hand in a situation like this, when you've already had a kicking off a politician who's thought, ah, football, brilliant, squirrel, you don't hand them an opportunity on a plate. She's got this Alex Salmond thing pending over her. And sure as hell, even if it's not her choice to run with that story, what is, because football sells papers in Scotland, what is going to be the first question she's asked when we come back with a positive? The first question from any journalist is going to be, Celtic in Dubai, what are your thoughts? So what do you think the consequences at the club should be?
Part of me was thinking maybe it was a chess move by Lowell. You know, if they're trying to engineer a sacking of a shite manager, but they don't literally have the grounds for it, you know, try and give him some rope by which he can hang himself and then we fire him for gross incompetence. Like, oh, he's the one that pressed for the Dubai trip. Get him out, you know? I mean, clearly he's not going to resign. The man is shameless. You know, the man is as brazen as they come, still pretending he's a Celtic manager at this point. And it's been such a disastrous season that maybe that was the move that the upper management were trying to make. Let's put him in a position where we can blame him. He can be the patsy. But I mean, we're gonna be back here in 2 weeks, and he's still gonna be there. the world will turn. You know.
See, for me, this whole Dubai trip, I summed up what's wrong with the club from the manager right the way through to the major shareholder. Because as we've just discussed, the trip was authorised in November. So the trip was authorised when we were going through St. Anthony and I's podcast of last week about the season review. It was at a point where if we'd won our games in hand, we were only 4 points behind Rangers and the board still believed in the manager.
Yeah.
Right? So at that point, the manager's saying, look, every season we've really benefited from this break. Yeah. Can I get this break? So that my perception is that's where it starts in October time. Am I still allowed this break? Because every season we benefited in Rangers by not having that break. Rangers have got a smaller squad than us. They start to tire and we'll really benefit from it. So he's asked for it. This is my perception. It then goes up to the line to the chief executive. Now, this is where the chief executive earns being £1 million a year for me. Because the chief executive then says, November, December, he starts to see the coronavirus numbers getting worse. I think it'll be a really bad look. Even after it's authorised, maybe even after it's booked, Neil, I think this might be a really bad look for us. Even if he doesn't do that, again, getting back to the structure of the club, this is why you have non-executive directors. Because non-executive directors should change in a business 3 to 5 years to stop them being pally and with the bricks so that they are part of the decision making. Part of the benefit of a non-executive directors, by that they're not executives of the business, so they don't make decisions, but they're supposed to give a fresh insight from equity. They're not part of the day-to-day business because they've got other business activities. So none of our non-executive directors have ongoing external business activities in customer-fronting businesses. You know, our non-executive directors should be people from other businesses in a customer. And at that point, at a board meeting, that's where they would have put in and said, look, here's the experience that I've got at Boots. Here's the experience that I've had at XYZ retailer. Here's the experience that we've had at BT. I think there is only a small positive chance of a benefit and huge potential risks of a problem here. I really think this should be something we should reconsider, because what if we get a negative case and we've gone away in a pandemic? It's just the aesthetics of it. All of these things should have been voiced, and somebody should have said, can we all take a step back here? The league's gone. Do we really think by us doing this, we are going to win every game between now and the end of the season? Let's do SWOT analysis. What are the benefits? What are the potential downsides? What are the threats? What are the weaknesses of doing this trip? And they were all what's happened.
I thought one thing, I mean, I heard Chris Sutton on Twitter, he was kind of scapegoating the fact that Julien was involved in it. Because he's an injured player, and they're claiming it was a sporting exercise. Now, I think that's bullshit. I mean, it's not a jolly, but it is a relaxation. You know, it's a
team bonding exercise.
And it is a chance to diffuse, you know, get away, get some sun, swim in the sea, swim in a pool. You know, I understand that. And in that sense, I've no issue with Julien going.
No.
You know, because it isn't just a training session. He is part of the team. He's a Celtic player. We hope, you know, on a good day, he's back and he's well. So the folk that are trying to make that an issue, I disagree with that. I think Julien, as much as anyone deserved to be there. So I'm not going to point any fingers at him as an individual, although he is the one, isn't he, that's ended up with it.
But I mean, there is an element of, it's not like by taking an injured player, we increase the chances of somebody on the trip having COVID. The thing that's got me is my understanding of the reason why the 13 players who've had to isolate are the 13 players. I mean, obviously, maybe some of the younger ones didn't go at all, but the reason specifically for the 13 who are the 13 is because it came down to their proximity on the buses and the plane to Julien. So the medical staff who were treating Julien would have then interacted with some of the players.
Yeah.
And maybe somebody listening to this who won't, you know, I could be making this guy in the pub with a shell suit and pair of brown trainers type comment here, right? But I would have thought one of the protocols you'd be wanting to do in where people sit in the bus, where people sit in the plane, where people are sitting in restaurants, what staff are interacting with what players, I would be thinking, taking the attitude of, right, okay, we can't have all the strikers.
Yeah.
We can't have all the goalkeepers. You know, okay, so the goalkeepers might be best mates, but I'm sorry, this season, being Barkas and Hazard, you're not speaking to each other.
Yeah.
Because you need to be separated. You four strikers, you know, you're going to have to be separated to make sure that if something did run through us, if we did get hit, not having, as we experienced tonight, all strikers out. But, you know, maybe what I'm asking for isn't realistic and isn't one of the causes of it. It just seems odd to me that our midfield seems to be pretty much intact. It's our strikers, four of our strikers and two of our three goalkeepers.
Was there a sub-keeper on the bench tonight?
Doohan. We recall Doohan from Ross County.
Oh, okay. Right. That's interesting.
So, and I don't know. I know they highly rate both Ross, Hazard and Doohan. And I do. I wonder, actually, if they slightly rate Doohan more than Hazard. Because see, if you've got three goalkeepers, And when you started the season, Hazard's third choice, or say Hazard and Doon would be equal third choice, would you not be more inclined to send out the guy who you want to get game time to? I'm more inclined to send out the third choice and keep the fourth choice if there's marginal between them, because you want the third choice to go and get game time and be a better player.
Yeah. I mean, they're both youth internationals. That's why I've genuinely got a bit of hope or belief in both of them, you know, given a chance. But, you know, who knows?
So obviously there's the manager himself, but do you think any head should roll for this?
At this point, nobody that is going to be fired or resign is going to do what they should do. So there's no point, you know, I mean, we all know what should happen, but it's not going to happen. For me, the lightning rod for every bad decision, every domino that has fallen this season, is that, you know, it's around the coach, the manager, call him what you want. And that's the part that could be changed and perhaps, you know, push us off in a better direction. I don't lament Lowell the way many do. We've all made bad decisions in our life. He made Neil Lennon the coach of Celtic a second time. But ultimately, I'll always look at the 9 in a row that we just did and say, all right, yeah. And I'll look at the fact that he got the checkbook out last summer and, you know, tried to win 10 in a row. And someone else's decisions meant that didn't happen. I'm past calling for a certain head. There's no point.
All right. And you don't think anyone will go? I did wonder, actually, today. I found it very difficult to do any work today with all that going on. I kept checking to see if there was any more news. I mean, so last night was when, obviously, the thing came out. We had a player out. Then I found out it was Julian. And then I was speaking to someone who told me that it was going to be at least 10 first-team players were out. And actually, the club were advised not to say the Julian story last night, but to wait until they knew how many players were going to be out, and just to do it in one go and just say Julian's out and so are all these players.
Yeah.
But they decided to say Julian last night. Well, a player last night, and then you know, find out today. So I'm checking regularly through the course of the day to find out, have we made even more of a mess of this? And actually I thought, you know, I find it mildly amusing. I actually found it funny. Getting back to the point we've discussed before, my anger was in August.
Yeah.
I'm now at this is so ridiculously bad, it's just amusing.
I had the issue where I've actually blocked Celtic's official account on Twitter just because I cannot put up with his interviews. But obviously today was a day of a lot of retweets and comments from other people that I listened to. But then you get that thing where the message that has been retweeted is blocked, and then you're intrigued. It's like, all right, of all the dickheads that I've blocked, which one is it? You know? And then, all right, it's official Celtic. Oh, God, I better unblock it just to see what they're saying. And then, oh, God. But no, not really reacting to it, you know?
So I did wonder whether if there was going to be any heads to roll, it would be after the game. I mean, I don't think they will.
Yeah.
But I did think maybe the strategy is we need to get this game played. Then we can say we'd review the circumstances. I mean, did you read the Celtic statement on it? On the game? On the fact that 13 players were out.
I skimmed it.
Aye. So could have happened if we'd stayed at home.
Yeah.
No, because if we stayed at home, we wouldn't have had all the players on one big giant tube in midair for about 10 hours congregating together. You could have isolated it much better if you were at home. So Yeah, I don't see any changes. So we've got a game. We're at home to Livingston on Saturday, and obviously we drop points at home this season. That's what we do. What's your expectation for Saturday?
I think the players that did well today, you know, hopefully no injuries were picked up. You know, get another run at it. And you know, it's Livingston at home. You know, no matter how bad it gets, we're never going to fear playing Livingston at home. I'm guessing what we'll still have no strikers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because everybody's self isolating for 10 days. So.
So I mean, there's part of my brain saying, all right, there'll be another Killian Sheridan or Craig Beattie on the youth team, and you realise that Harper is the Killian Sheridan / Craig Beattie. You know, so there probably is no better option as a striker. I don't know, maybe Harper looks, you know, he looks all right on some of the videos I've seen. You know, if he gets a game where he gets to run away from them, maybe he'll do well. But if they just sit in and defend like many teams do at Celtic Park, Turnbull and Soro and McGregor all get the shots off and score the goals that'll win us the match. So nothing to fear playing Livingston.
I'd like us to play somebody else on the right and Turnbull through the middle in the number 10 position.
Yeah.
Because I think that'll do it. As I say, I think that's 6 games in a row Livingston have won.
That's quite impressive, isn't it?
First man, you know, as I say, George Burley and Martin O'Neill are the only two managers that I think have done better than that in their first 6 games. So we'll see where that comes from. But for me, I tell you the other thing I would do if I was coaching Celtic this week, getting ready for playing Scottish football, I'd stick cones strategically in different parts of the pitch in key positions so you can get used to the referee getting in the way. Today, McLean, if his name is,
yeah,
just kept
McLean,
getting in the way,
yeah,
in the first half. But one of the big things for me this season is Frimpong's gone backwards. He seems to have lost his ability to beat anybody, and he seems to have lost fitness and pace.
I scribbled my note in the 84th minute was Frimpong pegged back ? You know, that's where I'm trying to put a positive spin on this completely non-effectual performance. You know, it's like, has he, you know, been pushed back by a good hips performance? Has he done an excellent defensive shift? Because I mean, primarily, a right back should be defending, of course. And we expect better because we're Celtic fans. It was a home game, but I was trying to, you know, it's not like he was up against some flying winger that was doing him. I think he was kind of isolated on his own because, like you say, Turnbull on the right wasn't, you know, it's not where he belongs, and there was guys pouring down, and they definitely, when they had set pieces from like the halfway line, you know, they were doing that classic Scottish football thing now, which is, you know, overload Frimpong and fire the ball in there. So, you know, he is getting picked on by every team we're playing against. But, you know, that's for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, because he's not kicked on.
Do you know, I interacted quite a lot of Celtic players at the point where Strachan took over from O'Neill. And one of the things about that was the sort of people who'd been there for O'Neill through the previous, you know, the Agat and all them.
Yeah.
I realised the reason they were wanting to move on is they'd been left to their own devices to do whatever they wanted to do. And a new manager had come in and wanted them to train, and they couldn't be bothered with that, right? And as I'd said about interacting with Adam Virgo, I remember him saying that Strachan was really big on fitness, and that Strachan had analysed our last season under Martin O'Neill when we, you know, lost the league, and the majority of our goals were getting lost in the first 5 minutes of a game, last 5 minutes of the first half, first 5 minutes of the second half, last five. And Strachan's point to the players was, you lose goals in those moments when you're not fit.
Yeah.
because you're just getting up to speed when a game kicks off or a half kicks off, and you are just tired out. And our goal today just seemed like a tired team losing a goal. Laxalt was a tired tackle. I'm a bit more forgiving on Hazard. I think Hazard is just bad decision making against Hearts, and then again tonight it's bad decision making, which just comes from playing games.
Yeah,
I'm not saying he's going to become a Celtic goalkeeper. I'm just saying that I'll forgive him again. I think he just thought, I need to come and get this. But the other players, it was tired challenges coming in.
Yeah.
And for me, the overriding thing is the team doesn't look fit, as well as coach tactically. But I will give them the benefit of the doubt today, because it was like a League Cup team. It was like a League Cup team under Martin O'Neill. You know, when all these players are stuck in together that haven't, you know, oh, I'm sure I've trained for you once, you know, that type of thing, and they just don't look like they play together. So I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, and, you know, it was all very rushed, and, you know, let's see where we are at Livingston. What's your prediction for the score then on Saturday against Livingston?
Oh, you've scared me with this 6 in a row chat. I mean, at this point, you'd be a mug to bet on a clean sheet. That said, you know, if Soro plays well, get every chance of getting a clean sheet. I'll go for 2-0. 2-0. Yeah.
I'm just trying to look through to see if I can get... I put in Livingston winning running, and I accidentally put an E at the end of Livingston, so it's... I'm trying to Google it to tell you, and it's telling me all about Ken Livingston, winning Mayor of London. I couldn't tell you the winning run. I'm pretty sure it's 6 games in a row, which is the longest that a new manager has won in Scottish football, apart from George Burley. I'll go with that Celtic win. I'll do that. And with that, I will say, Anthony Murray, thanks very much.
Okay, hail, hail.
Hope you enjoyed that. There'll be more for podcasts along soon. Hopefully we'll record one straight after a victory, but we'll see. Hopefully we've finished this season in a Champions League position. Hopefully we finish this season with players on the park that have us enjoying our football. I'm sure they'll come back after the COVID, and we'll probably go on a winning run, which will be fruitless. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady. That was him, Anthony Murray, saying good night and God bless. Good night. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and get here today. Oh, picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Oh.